Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here.
Ah, what a mess.
I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get a hold of Garrett there for a second. I was just going to talk about how much, screw you, I like the Ewoks. I don't care. For a whole segment. I watched the despecialized version of Return of the Jedi last night. It was great. And, you know, I hadn't seen Return of the Jedi in so long that it was really great, man. It was almost sort of kind of watching it new again in a way, kind of a little bit. It was good. You can get it on the Pirate Bay, the despecialized version. Anyway. Yes, our first guest up today is, of course, the great Gareth Porter. And I say, of course, because he's got a write-up, a full write-up now, not just on Parchin, but on the entire IAEA final report on Iran's possible military dimensions. Welcome back to the show, Gareth. How are you doing?
Hi, Scott. Thanks again for having me on. I'm fine.
Good, good. Very happy to have you here. Everybody, you know Gareth. He wrote the book on the Iranian nuclear scare, as it's called in the subtitle. It's Manufactured Crisis. Of course, Manufactured Crisis. Writes for Middle East Eye and for Truth Out. And this one is at Loblog and Mozilla updated without asking me. And so now the tab is lost because it destroyed my tab kit. Here it goes. Loblog.com, the IAEA's final assessment. And so we talked already about, you know, kind of the ridiculous way they tried to defend their previous accusations while climbing down from them at the same time in regards to the pretended explosion chamber at Parchin. But now you're kind of taking a more holistic approach to the entire PMD report here. So I guess what's first on the list that you'd have people know, Gareth?
Well, in this piece, Scott, what I tried to do was two different things at the same time or together in the same piece. First of all, trying to give some historical context to this final assessment by the IAEA, telling the story very briefly again of how the IAEA really became what I call the prosecutor for the United States and the coalition the U.S. has been leading, the prosecutor against Iran, and in the sense that, of course, what a prosecutor does is try to get a guilty verdict, or if you can't get a guilty verdict, you use the news media, you put out stories that make it look like the defendant is guilty. And that means that you simply use all the tricks available to you to skew opinion in the direction of a suspicion that the target of your case is guilty. And that's exactly what the IAEA has done since 2008 in particular. I mean, there were some slight indications of that even before that, back in 2003, 2004, up to 2000 through 2007. But really, you know, the story of the IAEA as prosecutor begins in earnest in 2008. And I've written about that before, and I'm sure we've talked about it on your show as well. But, you know, what they've done is to essentially keep Iran in the dock of world opinion, under suspicion and under accusation of having dabbled in nuclear weapons development, research and development, while the United States was carrying out a policy of maximizing pressure. And this is both under George W. Bush and Obama administrations, maximizing the pressure on Iran for a variety of reasons. And you know, to go to the Obama administration part of this, clearly the purpose was to try to force Iran to essentially concede its entire program of uranium enrichment, to give it up. which was what the Obama administration's aim was in the first 4 years, the first administration. And so the IAEA really has fulfilled that mission by, in its, all of its reports, continuing to repeat the same sort of mantra. And in the final assessment, and here's the second part of my story, my article, what I do is break down, the ways in which the IAEA, the tactics, that the IAEA has used to keep the idea that Iran, is suspect of having, carried out research and development of nuclear weapons without really explicitly making the charge, in a direct sense. And I think this is, very important to understand that distinction. Mm-hmm. And they do it over and over again. And I point out that, you know, one of the key tactics is to use the language of relevance or relevant to, instead of saying that Iran had, you know, technology or an organization, or research that was in fact about nuclear weapons. What they say, they use the language, that in one way or another, says that Iran was doing something that was relevant to, relevant to development of nuclear weapons. And that is a very interesting and obvious clue, as to the modus operandi of the IAEA, just how, deceptive, and fundamentally dishonest their entire approach has been.
Yeah, in other words, they're caught out just by their Fox News type speech, where just series of implications that, well, look, they have this that could be used for this, and they have this that could be used for that. But so am I reading you right here then, that you're saying that even in the final report, not only do they not show an Iranian nuclear program, but they don't even show an Iranian, I mean, nuclear weapons program, pardon me, but they don't even show an Iranian nuclear weapons research program. Never mind making a bomb, but even a program to really figure out how to, whether or not they could, and this kind of thing. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. They do not at any point in this final assessment say that we have identified this evidence that Iran carried out this this research or development experiment or set of experiments that were for nuclear weapons. Instead, they resort to this very deceptive language that that essentially is inconclusive, but is written in such a way as to leave the impression that yes, that it looks like Iran's behavior or institutions were highly suspect.
I'm sorry, before the break here, Gareth, I wanted to work in a correction here that's entirely my own error. I got an email from Gordon Prather, who listened to our interview, and said, no, man, I never said that they could test an implosion system with lead. This is tangential to our discussion about Parchin, whether they could use substitute metals. In the IAEA report, they talk about tungsten, as you've already ridiculed in your other piece. But I had thought that Gordon Prather had told me that it was possible to use lead for those kind of experiments, which was a red herring because it wasn't in the report anyway. And then Gordon corrected me that was entirely not right, that I must have been confused and some other reference to lead in our discussions and conflated it, something like that. So sorry to everyone who heard that, and for the red herring there is entirely my own screw up. But anyway, we'll be right back with the great Gareth Porter to talk more about this final IAEA report on the possible military dimensions in just a minute. Check him out at lowblog.com. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday. And The Future of Freedom with FFF Founder and President Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. As always, I'm interviewing the great Gareth Porter about a thing he wrote. It could be called the Scott Interviews Gareth Porter Show, really. Well, you know, they claimed a thing, and so he wrote about it. So I'm interviewing him. It's finally the final report of the International Atomic Energy Agency on the accusations known as the possible military dimensions of Iran's nuclear program. And, Gareth, you're really right. I wish I could figure out a way to argue with you a bit or something, but I read the IAEA report, and it is all a bunch of, geez, well, they have a thing that is consistent with a possible use of this, that, the other thing, and they don't even really try much harder than that to say that, you know, this shows they really were pursuing nuclear weapons. And so my question for you really is, you know, in your book where you go through and explain all the dual use technology in the possible military dimensions from the, you know, so-called smoking laptop or laptop of death or whatever, the fake laptop, and then plus the other accusations, are these all the same ones that you've already shown that, no, dummy, the ring magnets are sitting on a counter at the university just like they said they were, and et cetera like that?
No, no. They have, over the last few years, I mean, since 2008, essentially there's this other series of intelligence documents and reports, all of which came from the Israelis. This, of course, directly reported by former Director General of the IAEA, Mohammed El-Baradei, in his memoirs, 2011, that the Israelis turned over a whole collection of these documents and intelligence reports. And although he revealed this in his memoirs that it was from the Israelis, that they turned them over directly, the IAEA has never allowed the reading public to know, you know, who it was who turned these documents over. And of course, this is really one of the great unreported, untold scandals of the IAEA. That,
so wait, let me just make sure I understand. You're saying there's, if I understand right, there's kind of three big different batches of fake accusations here. One is the intercepted teletypes. One is the smoking laptop of fraud. And then the third is the report that the Israelis handed over. Is that
absolutely
right? And
yeah,
we're talking about the third batch now is what's really under investigation. The first two closed.
Scott, you're one of the very few people in the world who would be able to absolutely nail the complexity of the evidence that we're talking about here. Yes, it's the third group of documents which were turned over by Israel from 2008 and 2008, 2009, and some then came a little bit later. And so that's really what's reflected in a 2011 IAEA report, which was the one that the United States and its allies badly wanted to be have attached to an IAEA report as an annex. And Mohammed El-Baradei refused to do it because he said, look, these materials, these documents have never been authenticated. We can't vouch for them. So we can't put out a report that is based entirely on this unauthenticated set of documents. But of course, Amano came in on, he was a guy who the Americans chose to support as the successor to El-Baradei precisely because he had been enthusiastically on board in 2008 when the U.S. was putting pressure on El-Baradei, to embrace these documents, and he didn't want to do it. So they, you know, supported him to become the director general. And it was on the assumption, on the understanding, I should say, that he would, in fact, publish this compendium of intelligence reports, essentially blessing them, giving the IAEA's blessing that they're credible, when the United States wanted him to publish them when it would do the most good politically and diplomatically for them, which was, in fact, late 2011, when the United States was working on the essentially putting together the international coalition to support the crippling sanctions against Iran that we saw put in place in 2012.
All right, so now, when this report came out, though, all the headlines said, oh, man, see, yeah, and especially all the neocons, oh, the CIA was wrong when they said that their nuclear weapons program ceased in 2003. It continued all the way through 2009. What specifically are they basing that year number on? Do you know? Is that, yes, what's in there?
Yeah, it is very explicit that what they're referring to in the report is the famous neutron initiator document, which I've written about, we've talked about on your show years ago, 2009, was it? I believe it was 2009, 2010. And of course, that document was a fake. And even U.S. intelligence and European intelligence agencies recognized that it wasn't authentic, and wouldn't really give it their blessing. And in that document, it's suggested that there's a 4-year plan to carry out research on neutron, using neutrons for various purposes, and it's implied very strongly that one of them is for nuclear weapons. It's not stated explicitly, but that is clearly the implication, that is that this was a 4-year program for relating to nuclear weapons. And that's where they get the 2000, because this was supposedly 2006 document. The judgment has been then rendered that their indications, as they would put it, that the Iranians had continued activities as late as 2009. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about.
Right. And then they refer, surprisingly, I thought, in the piece to the graph, and you mentioned this in your piece again at lowblog.com, about this graph that they had previously leaked to George John at the AP, that I had mistakenly believed that nuclear physicist Yosef Butt had successfully laughed off the face of the earth back when it came out, with his article in Reuters saying that, listen, whoever forged this obviously doesn't know the first damn thing about fission. So get the hell out of here.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It was laughed off the earth. In effect, it was clear that this graph was done by somebody who didn't know anything about the technology, or the numbers or the methodology, to do such a graph. It was a high school student or an undergraduate or something like that. The IAEA should have shamefacedly admitted it in a report, but of course they don't do that. They are protected by the most powerful nation on earth, and therefore they just continue to ignore it. And I think I mentioned in my article that I actually questioned, oh, I didn't say it was me, but Amano was appearing at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C., and I asked him, what about this graph? Is this the one that the IAEA was referring to in its report in 2011? He refused to answer the question. And, of course, they ignored this entire issue in the final assessment because it's too embarrassing. Instead, they, again, used weasel wording to avoid the truth about this whole set of issues.
It's amazing. All right, so now what's left? We got the bridge wires, obviously parching. Marivan, we've discussed before that if there's anything to it, then how come the IAEA won't show up to go and inspect it? You learn anything new about the Marivan accusations in here? Or what else am I missing, Gareth?
No, absolutely not. I mean, they make the interesting observation that we have assessed that the alleged experiments with high explosives that they suggested were related to nuclear weapons development took place in a site called Marivan, not a region called Marivan. Now, what the significance of that is anybody's guess, because they don't give any further explanation. But they do not respond at all.
Well, wait, it sounds like what they're saying is, you know, sort of like there's a street named Austin Avenue in the center of Georgetown, Texas. And they're saying, well, you know, Maravon, the nuclear site, could be anywhere, not necessarily anywhere near the actual place. Is that right?
Well, I mean, you could derive that from what they said, but there's no explanation. So it's anybody's guess what they mean by that. I think you're right I think what they're doing is covering up the fact that they were never really told where this was. And so, you know, they couldn't even have visited it had they wanted to. But the bottom line here, Scott, is that it's very clear to me that the IAEA has known for quite a while now that they were had. You know, there have been enough revelations by Robert Kelly, by other former IAEA officials, Tariq Rauf, things that I've written have you know, been part of the mix that show that the IAEA just, you know, got it wrong and that they were given information that was false. And, of course, the IAEA doesn't want to admit it. And, again, they don't have to politically because they have this protection. So that's really what's going on in the case of Maravon, as in the case of all these other issues. But right. I do want to, in the very little time I'm sure we have remaining, I do want to mention the one very interesting case where the IAEA really makes a major backdown. I mentioned in another article about part that they made a backdown on Parchin. But specifically on the so-called green salt papers, which were part of the original laptop documents.
Right.
They admit for the first time that these papers were really, there was something wrong with them. They say they were of very low quality and not up to what the Iranians had available to them in their declared nuclear program. This is an astonishing admission by the IAEA. And to me, of course, it really signifies that they're aware that this set of documents on the bench scale process for what they call making green salt, but essentially preparing the gas form of uranium for enrichment, they were falsified. And they aren't going to say it, but that's the clear implication of this.
Wow, that's great that they can see that in there. You know, I'm pretty sure, I'd hate to go misquoting the guy again, but I'm pretty damn sure that this is exactly what Gordon Prather said when the so-called smoking laptop was first revealed, that it made no sense for these bench-level experiments in converting the yellow cake to tetrafluoride green salt, because you can't do anything with that anyway. It's got to be hexafluoride gas, and they already had a facility for doing that at ISFAHAN. Well,
exactly.
So why in the world would they even have this in the first place?
I'm sure that Gordon did say exactly that, and you know, I've written that as well in my book, and that's what the Iranians were explicitly arguing at the time when the issue was brought to them, when they were shown these documents. They said, look, this doesn't make any sense at all. Plus, they pointed out that the documents were seriously flawed. And even Ali Hainunen, the head of the Safeguards Department, had to admit that they were right, that there were serious flaws in the documents.
Hey, give them credit for even bringing it up again in this thing. You'd think they might have just forgot about that.
Well,
this is
true.
One of the more clownish of their errors, but still.
And who knows why they chose to do that? I mean, that's sort of in the area where I'm not able to really provide any guidance or any clarification as to what their motive was in doing that.
Yeah. Well, I better let you go. You'll probably want to watch Obama threatening the world right now live on TV. And I got to get Daniel Larrison on the show to talk about America and Saudi murdering Yemenis all day. So thank you very much for coming back on the show, Gareth. You're the best, man.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, y'all, that is the heroic Gareth Porter. This time he is back at Jim Loeb's blog, loeblog.com, the IAEA's final assessment. It'll be the spotlight tomorrow on antiwar.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.